Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So if you happen to be a South African and you've traveled to many of the regional partners that we have, our neighboring countries, Namibia, Botswana, Eswatini, and maybe even the likes of Lesotho, well, you'd be well aware that sometimes in these regions you can actively use a local currency, being the rand, within those markets. But beyond that, you also have the flexibility to currently make payments through electronic funds transfer, EFT payments, to these regions. But there's an update that essentially this will be changing in South Africa, where South African banks will have to implement a significant change to the direct payments and debit orders that might take place within the region called the Common Monetary Area, which includes our partners like Namibia, Lesotho and Eswatini. To help us unpack what this means, why it matters, and of course how we as consumers need to be prepared for it, we're joined by the CEO of the Payments Association of South Africa, Geeta Erling. Such a pleasure to have you with us, Geeta.
Thank you, Gugulethu, and good evening to you and your listeners.
Thank you kindly for your time. I can believe that this will be a highly educational conversation, just to give us some context and perspective around some of the changes that will be taking place in the payment system. But maybe let's start with the status quo before we reflect on the impending change. Essentially, how have payments worked within the common monetary area to the benefit of businesses and individuals?
So to the point you were making in your introduction, common monetary area is one-to-one currency. And because it's structured that way and the rand is legal tender in each of those countries, even though they all have their own currency, we've been able to treat payments between South Africa and the rest of the common monetary area as if they were domestic payments. Mm-hmm. So it works exactly the same as if I were to make a payment from my South African bank account to your South African bank account.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a good thing because, as we know, there's a strong diaspora within this particular region. But I'm made to understand in recent reports that this will change. Help us understand why and how.
So this is a regulatory change, and we understand that it is done within the context of the broader FATF, so the Financial Action Task Force requirements. Yes, so it's in that context. So when you think about it, if I'm paying to your bank account in South Africa, both of us were onboarded by a South African bank. We're acting under the same regulatory framework. If somebody has to do an anti-money laundering investigation on one of the two of us, then the authorities can simply approach the local bank and can ask for the information that they need. It's very different when you're playing cross-border, mm-hmm. because then you're not necessarily under the same framework. It's harder to request information. And so for that reason, FATF requires cross-border payments to be processed very differently than domestic payments.
Sure. This is intriguing because I guess, number one, we're acknowledging that it's a step in the right direction as part of South Africa's efforts to get off the grey list. But number two, I guess it does add a certain layer of complexity to the common monetary area. And how does this change then in terms of regulation? And is there no other alternative to ensure that our neighboring countries can also fall under a similar or easier level of regulation?
So there will still be alternatives for these payments to flow. The bigger impact, well, there's two impacts. So maybe let's unpack those before I directly answer your question.
Sure.
So the first is that if you are a debit order collector, you may no longer do that cross-border. Mm. Now, I would argue that's entirely appropriate. In South Africa, we've put a huge amount of work into building processes and due diligences so that rogue debit order collectors, you'll remember the old 99 and 199 yes. rand, yes, rogue collections, so that they've been removed from the system. And if something does go wrong in South Africa, it's easy for you to recover your money. Cross-border, we're dealing with different regimes, different environments. So I would argue it is appropriate that cross-border debits are limited to in-country. It won't impact you as the debit order payer, but if you, for example, are Namibian who's using a South African insurance company, that South African insurance company will have to collect your money into a Namibian account as opposed to a South African account. Mm. So impact there for the collectors of debit orders. What's probably of more immediate interest is the scenario we spoke about earlier, me paying you, but this time you're sitting in Namibia.
Yes.
In that instance, the payment is still possible. But you're going to do it in a different place in your online banking because there's more information that is required to flow with the payment and more checks that need to be done. So instead of just going to your normal online banking, your app beneficiary page, and capturing the few details that one does, you would have to go to whatever they're calling their online banking, their global banking, their international payments, but whatever piece of their app they use for enabling cross-border payments. So it's not that the payments are going to stop.
Okay.
It's just that they're processed in a different manner and from a different place.
As you say, there might be more information that's requested here. Is there disclosure and an understanding of what kind of information might be required?
So each bank may have implemented it differently, but it's likely to be things like the address of the party that you're making the payment to.
Okay. Makes sense. Just enhancing on the KYC information that will likely be shared with regard to these clients. That's refreshing, and I guess one that's understandable to accept. But I can imagine that this does lead to not only changes that the banks need to implement, but perhaps even additional costs.
And the extent to which the banks are going to, or how individual banks are going to manage those costs, are up to them. The costs, Google A2, is not actually in the payment system.
Okay.
It's in the compliance checks. And the moment that a human being has to get involved in processing the payment to check some or other detail, that's when the costs start to add up.
Ah, I see. And this will likely change or differ from banking institution to banking institution.
Yes, and we have no visibility. We're a member association, so we can have no visibility of how each of them choose to manage their pricing to the market.
Okay, understood. And that does help so that we as consumers are adequately prepared to know that we need to have those conversations directly with these banks and institutions. Geeta, on this note, my mind is, I guess, not only boggled, but excited to understand how this might be met with alternative means of payment. As we know, there are money transfers that currently do take place, cross-border facilities through fintech companies and other businesses that might exist within the payments environment in South Africa. Could we not find that those who are perhaps guilty of money laundering and fraudulent activity will find ways to bypass the system?
So the system is generally set up on the basis that anybody who is involved in money transfers has to adhere to the same set of rules and standards. Generally, if it is a fintech providing the service, they will be doing it in partnership with a bank in all likelihood. So they will be held to the same standard of compliance as that bank already is. The only way that you would easily circumvent these types of rules is perhaps by putting cash in a taxi and driving it across the border. And of course, the controls around cash are completely different. We look at controlling it when it goes into the banking system and when it comes out of the banking system. But what happens to the cash in circulation? Of course, nobody has any visibility.
I'm glad that you mentioned that because, as we know, transporting money via cash is a lot more risk that isn't necessarily recognized effectively, and that all these alternative payment systems as well will have to comply with the current rules and regulations. Is there a time frame as to how this will be implemented and some of the regulatory changes that need to be overcome before then?
So the go live for this change is scheduled for the 9th of September. There are a few back-end processes that will happen after that. So it's entirely possible that somebody pays to an account that's no longer open and then funds must be returned. So that sort of thing will be allowed for the next few days just so that everything's closed out. And then the various back-end processes that will close down the existing parts of the system that do this will take place. So it's a very firm deadline that's been imposed on us. We've given ourselves a little bit of time because the regulatory deadline is the 30th of September. Mm. But of course, we don't like making big changes to systems when volumes are high at month end.
Mm, very true. Geeta, I'm so intrigued because you've also, in your role as a CEO of the Payments Association of South Africa, you also have the benefit of having worked for some of these banks and financial institutions. And I'm hoping that you can just educate us as 101, as customers. You know, we see money move in and out of our bank accounts. It's very easy for me to send a payment to you, add you as a beneficiary, and in literally in 30 seconds, Bob's your uncle. But help us understand the complexities behind these systems that take place, because this is even where we've heard around technologies like blockchain perhaps coming in to provide some solutions. So for the layman, when I send money into your account and pay you as a beneficiary or receive funds from you, help us understand the checks and balances that need to take place in the background.
So to your point, on paper, it's very easy. I was listening to you earlier talking about your accounting background. You're debiting one account, you're crediting another account. Mm-hmm. The challenge is in getting all the systems to talk to each other, speaking a common language. So there are a lot of different parties involved in moving money around, to ensuring that those systems are robust, that they are very secure, that they are very resilient, so they don't fall over every 5 minutes, and that if something does go wrong, and it very rarely does, but that if something does go wrong, you have a means of recovering it and sorting it out. So there's considerable technical and legal complexity that goes into the back end of payment systems, so that that very quick thing can happen where you tap your card and that's it. Get a leap on your mobile device and the transaction's gone through. The complexity that goes around just building that piece of technology and confirming, for example, that you do have money in your bank account or that it is indeed you tapping the card is considerable.
I can just imagine. And I think it really does make for a fascinating understanding for us as consumers to have a greater appreciation for the level of technology, skill and innovation that goes behind some of these themes. Speaking of payments, Geeta, your organization also takes a look at regulating debit orders. And you've touched on this very briefly in terms of understanding how this plays an influence in the change to payments, cross-border payments within the region. And I'm keen to understand what have we seen a rise or in concerns or reversal of debit orders that have might have been made largely on the back of the rising cost of living that South Africans have been under pressure by or pressured by?
Yes, so there's no question that the number of failed and disputed debit orders increases as the economic cycle becomes more challenging. And that does cause considerable concern for the collectors and users of the debit order system. So we are seeing those trends playing out, as well as seeing consumers putting stops on debit orders. We would generally encourage consumers to engage with the service provider who's collecting from their account and to make an arrangement with them rather than to use the banking system to simply dispute a valid collection that has happened against their bank account.
Okay. Really important, because I guess that does raise a lot of concern or rather highlight a shift in change in behavior that's also required. And does this also call for a heightened level of awareness from us as South African consumers? Because typically when one does sign up for a debit order, you are volunteering your banking information. Have we found that sometimes we as consumers perhaps have a user error in flouting the rules?
So we have seen abuse on both sides of the debit order system. We've seen abuse on the collector side, which relates to the 99 or 199, or perhaps even collecting when the party who agreed to the sale didn't fully understand what they were agreeing to. We've also seen abuse, as you describe it, on the payer side, which is when a payer has a perfectly valid collection from their account and then goes and disputes it. Now, if you do that to insurance company, that's one thing, they can stop cover. It's far more problematic when somebody's lent you money or you've got a cell phone in your hand and you're paying it off and you then stop the debit order. So we would definitely appeal to consumers to be, A, careful when they give out their bank account details and be very sure that they actually are wanting to sign this agreement. But secondly, if there is a problem with affordability or cash flow, rather to engage with the party who's trying to collect from them.
Very important that we enhance that level of open communication. If you've just joined us, we are in conversation with the CEO of the Payments Association of South Africa, Geeta Erling, who's giving us some insight into some of the changes that are taking place with regard to EFT and debit order changes from South African banks as well as our neighboring countries, Namibia, Lesotho and Eswatini, typically part of the common monetary area. Essentially, it's a step and a change to make sure that we enhance and improve the levels of making sure that we control any risk of money laundering in an attempt to ensure that we do get off the FATF grey listing environment and providing a lot more protection in terms of the adequate measurement and controls of anti-money laundering and combating financial terrorism. And on this note, Geeta, I think I'm also just intrigued to get an overview and perspective, given that you take care of such an important institution, being the Payments Association of South Africa. We're aware that the banking environment in South Africa is incredibly mature versus some of our peers across the continent. What does this also tell us about the level of our payments or maturity of our payment systems in South Africa and maybe within the common monetary area? In other words, how do we fare against our continental and international peers?
That's always a very interesting discussion, Guguletu. South Africa was one of the leaders in building electronic payment systems and arguably still has does have world-class payment systems. Mm-hmm. I think that our biggest challenge, though, relates to the extent to which they are used. So the statistics would show that something like 80-85% of South Africans have a bank account, but a very high proportion of those would, particularly those who receive social grants, would receive the money into their account and withdraw it in one go. Mm. Now, that's completely rational behavior when you consider the amount of a grant versus, say, the amount of a taxi fare required to go and draw the cash. Yeah. But to the point you were making earlier, that the challenge is that you can also lose all of that money in one go. Mm. So in my view, the biggest challenge that we face as South Africans in the payment system is how do we make electronic payments available to everyone, anywhere, anytime? And we've been doing a lot of work in that respect through new systems such as PayShop, which was recently launched. It's a very new system, but we have great hopes that we are creating an environment where digital payments will reach more people. So our problem is not in the sophistication of our systems. They compare to what you would find anywhere else in the world. Our problem is in how do we go from I own a bank account to I own a bank account and I use an electronic payment.
Sure, that's such a powerful way to put it. And I think we take it for granted, especially given that we, living in urban areas, tap and pay. I mean, I hardly withdraw money or cash from the ATM because my banking card is on my phone or I tap with my actual physical banking card. And it provides us with a greater appreciation for, I guess, the spectrum of users of payment systems and just how different it is in South Africa. Are there, I guess, significant ways of providing innovation and changing this? Or I guess, where are we in terms of that level of development to democratize and further enhance the level of support for payments in the country?
So we were very excited by the launch of PayShop in the last, 18 months, mm-hmm. because it's a real-time system and you can pay to a proxy, so you can pay to a mobile number without having to have bank account details, which makes it much easier for you and I to stand in front of each other. I pay to your mobile number, ding, ding, the money's in your account then and there. So we've created the basic infrastructure that allows for that to happen. What we now need to do is a lot more around rolling that out, creating the opportunities for that to be used in the informal sector. I often feel that we really will have achieved what we want to achieve, where I can tip the car guard using PayShop,
oh, yes.
Opposed to needing to have coins and low-value notes every time I do my grocery shopping.
Such a pleasure speaking to you, Geeta. This has been so fulfilling and filled with so much knowledge and insight for us to understand that, yes, we've made some positive gains and grounds in terms of payments in South Africa, but a lot more can certainly be developed. And as you say, you know, paying the car guard without having to withdraw cash is definitely the kind of solution that should be looking for. Thank you so much for your time this evening, ma'am.
It's the greatest of pleasure. I enjoyed it too. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Geeta Erling, the CEO of the Payments Association of South Africa.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.